First of all, it's time for our Shapiroette around the smouldering ruins of the failed state. Hello, Bruce.
Smouldering or bonfire, dumpster fire? It's more like it, I think.
Okay, hop into it.
Look, this is one of those weeks where to begin is almost defies imagination. You know, last night before I went to bed, the president left the hospital, went back to the White House, ripped off his mask, went back to a White House whose staff has itself been decimated by coronavirus. The president. We might a few weeks ago have metaphorically talked about the administration as a sort of a super spreader administration, but now it's actually true. The president is himself a one-man, walking, breathing super spreader, someone who, in the throes of coronavirus, endangered his own protection detail, Secret Service agents, who now insisted on going back to the White House and sending out a message that Americans who have lost, of course, at this point, 210,000 fellow citizens should not be afraid of coronavirus. He seems determined, despite his hospitalization and the fact that he still could get pretty sick over the course of the next week, he seems determined to follow the same course.
But Bruce, I find him wholly inspirational. And I quote, "Don't let it dominate you. Don't be afraid of it. You're going to beat it." I mean, Biden couldn't come up with a line like that.
You know, what's interesting is that evidently, when the news of his diagnosis sunk in on Friday, all the reports out of the White House were that the president had a major freakout. He really had a moment of explosive panic, and which is understandable. And I think what we're seeing now is a president who, more than anything else, doesn't want to be perceived as weak. For weeks now, the Trump administration and campaign, which of course are the same thing, have been doing everything they can to change the subject from coronavirus. And yet coronavirus keeps inserting itself at the top of the agenda. We had a Senate debate between Lindsey Graham, the Senate Judiciary Chair, and his exceptionally strong challenger, Jamie Harrison in South Carolina, at which Harrison brought a plexiglass shield and mounted it on the stage, the debate stage, between him and Senator Graham, because Senator Graham had been to the event, the super spreader event of this little White House outbreak, the nomination announcement for Judge Amy Coney Barrett as a Supreme Court justice. When you have Senate candidates bringing their own shields to debates to make sure they don't get sick, you know things are not normal.
Do you remember that wonderful dome of silence in
The cone of silence. Yes, the cone of silence. Well, I think, if we do go ahead with the next presidential debate on the 15th, I believe it is, it would require something like that. Of course, a cone of silence might be preferable to some of the explosive non-debating we saw at last week's debate, which, by the way, even though it feels like 100 years ago, of course, was the beginning of this news cycle, the kind of rampaging, not only rampaging over truth, but rampaging over the moderator, rampaging over the basic rules of debate that President Trump inflicted on a national audience last Wednesday night, less than a week ago, before the news cycle was upended by his diagnosis and the diagnosis of his close aide, Hope Hicks, now the diagnosis of Kellyanne Conway, Kayleigh McEnany, the current press secretary, and a host of the top officials in the country. You know, on a serious note, even at moments of genuine medical crisis or political crisis in previous administrations, even at moments of assassination, the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the assassination attempts against Ronald Reagan and Gerald Ford. We've never had a moment when the entire administration was in danger of being sidelined and decapitated.
And yet, such is the skepticism about anything that comes out of the White House, that the overwhelming conspiracy theory was that he probably didn't have it at all.
Well, and, you know, I have to confess that the unreliability of information from this White House is so extreme that I had briefly flirted with that idea that the president was seeking a moment of political advantage. I think he certainly will seek political advantage out of his illness if he can do it. But I think we can set aside doubt that he really is sick. Of course, he also has a personal physician, Dr. Conley, who seems to be horrifically conflicted, and I'll be generous about that, in his own ability to describe what's really going on.
He reminds me of that very funny doctor in 30 Rock.
Well, yeah. When Conley comes forth and says, well, and the president, the president is not needed oxygen today, and the press says, well, what about Friday? And the doctor says, the president has not needed oxygen today, and just keeps saying the same thing over and over, you know that there is a problem. And in fact, this president is trying to stage manage his own recovery. Stage management and medicine are two different disciplines. Whatever the osteopath, emergency physician, Dr. Connolly, seems to think about it. It just is further evidence that the only way for any professional, whether it's a medical professional, generals, lawyers, all of them in the central Trump orbit, can stay there and function only when they submit to being part of the show. And in this case, it's with life or death consequences, in which the presidential campaign and the White House have become a literal death cult.
You know, the world's greatest authority on COVID is not Fauci. It's my very distinguished Radio National colleague, Norman Swan. And he is very skeptical that the president is out of the metaphorical woods.
Well, if you look at the course of coronavirus in all kinds of folks, but particularly in men, obese men of a certain age, there's no reason to think that the president is not going to have another very bad spell, or indeed see things go south very quickly. They could go fine, but the typical course of the disease and the typical course of the body's immune response suggests that there's a lot of room over the next week for critical events, and there's a lot of room in the months after that for further relapses. We are now less than 30 days from a presidential election. We are less than 2 weeks from the next presumed debate, though why the Presidential Debate Commission wants to go ahead with that is not exactly clear to me. And we have a president and a presidential team and a cabinet who all are in mortal danger. This is a remarkable moment. And of course, it's all because of the Supreme Court, which is the other thing going on here in the background.
Now, it opens today, the new term, without Ginsburg. Will the nomination process go ahead?
Well, you know, right now, Senator McConnell insists that the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett is moving ahead with hearings scheduled to start the week of October 12th. It's not clear. The Republicans have a razor-thin majority since two senators have already said they're not going to vote for a razor-thin majority. And you now have two senators on the Judiciary Committee who already have tested positive. The likelihood that others will, and the very strong possibility that at least some senators will be sick and unable to vote in person should Judge Barrett's confirmation come before the full Senate before the election. And let's position this, right? Why are they rushing this through? Well, first of all, and most obviously, because as the president has already articulated, there are almost certain to be election law challenges in the event of anything except an overwhelming Biden victory, given absentee ballots, given the fights at the state level. They're almost certain to be Bush v. Gore type issues that come before the Supreme Court, and having a conservative majority, having Judge Barrett on there, can only benefit the president, is the White House's thinking. But also because this is shaping up as a blockbuster term in which we are going to be hearing cases over the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. We're going to be hearing cases over voting rights. We're going to be hearing cases over abortion regulation that may indicate where the court is going to go in the future. We're going to be hearing cases over immigration issues. This is going to be a major U.S. Supreme Court term, and the Republican Party, and this is not just President Trump, the Republican Party's compact both with the kind of business conservative anti-regulatory right and with the religious right is to fill that Ginsburg seat. This is the core of the contract, and that's why you have Republican senators willing to risk everything, including their own health and their own lives, to ram this nomination through. And yet, it may not happen, depending on, of course, on the senator's health and depending on the kinds of issues that tend to come up under the close scrutiny of Supreme Court confirmation fights.
And down, 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 American politics goes on that gilded escalator. Thanks for that, Bruce. And, of course, none of us want to miss the VP debate with Kamala versus Mike.